Welcome to FASD Family Life, the podcast for families by families, where we get real about raising children and youth with fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. I am your host, Robbie Seal, FASD educator, advocate, and mom of four children with FASD. I know the struggle is real, but so is success. I hope that sharing my experiences can help you feel that you're not alone and that there is hope for you and your child with FASD. Be sure to catch every episode by subscribing to FASD Family Life Podcast. When you subscribe, new episodes will automatically appear in your phone, iPad, or wherever you get your podcasts. And did you know that when you subscribe to FASD Family Life Podcast and when you rate and review an episode, you are helping other parents and caregivers just like you. Your engagements in these ways signals to the algorithms that this podcast is relevant to people who want to know more about fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. And because of your help and engagement, we have reached over 12,000 downloads already. And the podcast is only 10 months old. So thank you so much for helping me raise awareness of fetal alcohol spectrum disorder and helping me give hope and encouragement to parents and caregivers all around the world. Well, here we are, my friends, another episode of the FASD Family Life Podcast. This episode is really a fun one. It's a mom-to-mom conversation. In this case, I'm having a conversation with a mom who has fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. I recorded this episode with my friend Rebecca Talou, who lives in New York. She and I recorded this episode just before Christmas, so you will notice that we touch a little bit on Christmas and Christmas strategies and Christmas overwhelm. I've kept it in because I think it's still helpful and relevant for us, but Rebecca and I have a great time talking over a lot of different subjects, so I welcome you to grab your cup of coffee and sit down with me and enjoy this conversation I had with Rebecca. We're going to just have a wonderful conversation today, talking about some of the highlights of this past year and some of our learnings and what we're looking forward to in the year to come. So Rebecca, would you introduce yourself?
Sure. My name, as Robbie said, is Rebecca Talou, and I am almost 42, and I do have FASD. I was diagnosed at 34 years old by a pediatric geneticist. Yeah, I'm an author and a friend of Robbie's. Yeah, I'm just here to chit-chat about FASD and everything that comes with it.
Yeah, there's a lot that comes with it. We're going to talk about a whole lot of things today. We're going to talk about Rebecca's initiative to have the first ever fast run, FASD run, and she did that for September 9th this year. And we're going to talk about some dreams for the upcoming year. Started off with Rebecca's Christmas tips as an individual with FASD, as a mom running a household along with her husband. Rebecca, a couple of tips for Christmas.
Sure. So as an adult with FASD, Christmas, even if you don't have a brain disorder, Christmas is very stressful for everybody, I think. For me, it's gotten easier as my kids got older. When my kids were younger, it's a lot. Overstimulation with all of the presents, all of the wrapping, all the toys on the floor, all of the family that comes, all of the chatter, all of the drinking and the food. It's a lot. And it can overstimulate your brain. And when I'm overstimulated, I get very tired. So if you guys feel that way, it is okay to take a break. You can go somewhere quiet. If you're at your house, go to your room, do whatever calms you down. Weighted blankets actually work very well for me. And so if you like weight on you, go stick a weighted blanket on you. Make sure that you take care of yourself. And I know it's hard because you're trying to take care of everybody else. And even like the Christmas music, that really irks me. If there's a lot of it, I don't like that. But if things are too loud, let people know. If they're your friends and your family, they need to try to understand. Things are very overwhelming at Christmas. So just make time for yourself. Do what makes your brain calm. And mine is just time to myself for like, I don't know, even 30 minutes. But as my kids got older, it got easier. And I don't cook. My husband does. So I don't have that stress. But the family and all the lights and all the presents, it could be a lot. So just make sure you make time for yourself. That's my main tip, is just make time for yourself and know that it's okay to take a break.
I love that. I see that in my children. Well, they're able to communicate a little better, and I'm learning more about FASD and I'm learning more about that brain injury. So I can see what I might have thought as a rude behavior is actually a symptom. And so I don't perceive it as rude, and that's huge. And I can see that, you know, my girls will, if we have family over Christmas or any other time, if we have a family gathering, most of the time they're going to be spending it in their rooms.
Yeah.
And so when people are like, well, where are the girls? I'm like, it's okay. This is a lot for them. They'll come down when they can. And they know that there's no trouble. They never get in trouble for that. I will at some point go up to them and say, hey, can you come and play with your cousins for a little bit or hang out with your cousin for a little bit? And then you can go back. And they're like, okay. And then they do and they have fun. And sometimes they stay a lot longer, engaged a lot longer than I thought they would have. But right. It's at their tempo. And then when they're like, okay, I can't handle anymore, up they go to their room. And it's perfectly fine.
Yeah.
You said, how about the tree and the presents and what's that all about? Is it the visual stimulation?
It's the visual stimulation. And it's weird though, because I don't remember when I was younger, you know, we used to all decorate the tree together and I loved it. And that's fine because usually that was just the four of us. And that's how it is now. Decorating the tree is fine. It is. I think it's just all of it. Like if we're playing Christmas music, I've never liked Christmas music. It's very scratchy to me. Like if that's going on, if there are Christmas lights going on, if people are unwrapping the presents, it's all the noises and the sights and the sounds. I have learned to deal with it. But then after all that, I will get tired, even though I slept for 11 hours the night before. And I think it's just my brain finally processed it all and I'm exhausted. It's just every little thing my brain is seeing and hearing and processing. You know, people that don't understand think that I'm always tired and I'm always like, I can get very edgy and they take it as, you know, a threat that they did something. No, it's not. It's just, there's a lot. And until you walk in my shoes or understand FASD, you're not going to get it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And when I'll never know the feeling, I'll never know the experience internally. But I watch and I've opened myself up to learn about fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. It's such a difficult disability to understand because so many individuals with FASD look neurotypical, have a fabulous vocabulary, speak well, but the brain is processing, well, it's overwhelmed sometimes because of the lights and the sounds. But also, if we match your vocabulary and we match your pace, we're probably going to exhaust you.
Yeah. Yep.
So we've got to... slow our roll. And when the edginess comes, that should be our clue to back off.
Right.
Enough about Christmas. Let's talk about this fabulous year you had with building up to the first ever fast run.
Yes.
Tell me about the inspiration behind that.
So when COVID hit, I've been a runner since I was 11. And I got into it. My dad was a runner, like socially. And I loved it. And looking back, it probably helped regulate me, which it does now. So when COVID hit, this virtual race, all the virtual races, this whole entire thought process like took off all over the world. And it was a great idea because it was still COVID in 2021. I'm like, you know, I want to do a race and I want to raise money, but I don't know for what. So my mom was like, FASD. And then my husband, we were chatting and my husband's like, you could name it Run Fast. I'm like, oh my God, that's perfect. So they were instrumental in the, you know, coining of the name of it and what I should run for. And the virtual race, it's cheaper to get off the ground and everybody from anywhere can do it. That's the thing. You could do it from your living room if you wanted, if you had a treadmill. I mean, I ran with it. And I got in touch with NoFast, who is now FASD United. And Jen Wisdall took it and was like, we're going to make this happen. But before that, I was on Natalie's podcast, FASD Hope. And she's like, so where do you see yourself in 5 years? And this was in January of 2021. And I was like, oh, well, I want to do a race. And she's like, let's make it happen. She's like, we'll do this and we'll do it by September. And then just everything, she got in touch with Jen and then Jen got in touch with me and we did it in a lot less time than we're going to do it now. So we want to be really on board trying to make it happen, making it bigger this year.
Well, before we make it bigger, it was amazing. Like all those Run Fast posts were fantastic, and you had the medal, and you had everybody could post from everywhere. And I know, like, Natalie was highlighting on her socials, Jen Wisdall was highlighting it, I was highlighting it on my socials, trying to, you know, ramp it up. I have a friend in Scotland who runs O'Shea's FASD, and she was trying to get on board with the Run Fast. I think she couldn't do the Run Fast, but she was trying to do something. So people got on board with you, Rebecca. They loved the idea, and they loved that you were championing this, and they wanted to go for it. How many participants did you have in 2021?
We had 244. Mm-hmm. And they were runners, walkers, joggers, bikers. Like, and that's the other thing. Do whatever you want. It's just to raise awareness of the disability, because we wanted to make the invisible visible. And we wanted to highlight those with FASD that it doesn't define us, that we are successful and we can be. 244 participants. We ended up raising $6,000 for FASD United. We had sponsors. My goal is to get Brooks Running to sponsor us this year. It's a lofty goal, but it's out there. The shoes that I run with, they're Brooks, and they're like a running shoe and a running apparel. They're one of the only ones that I can actually, and they got back to me last year saying, thank you, but we can't do it this year. So I just emailed them today and I'm like, here's second annual. Can I get you on board? But we had amazing sponsors already.
Who were some of your sponsors?
We had FASD Hope, FASD United. We had, there's a lady, Audrey, that I met.
Audrey Page.
Yes. Her, she sponsored. We had a few others, and it was like up to $6,000.
Amazing. Well done. Congratulations. Congratulations. Do you have a goal for the second annual in terms of a goal of how many participants? Do you hope to double it, or what's your goal?
I would love, love, love to hit 500. I would love to hit 1,000, but let's go with 500. I would love to go beyond Canada. The platform we used, because it was our first year and we didn't have a ton of money, wouldn't let us go beyond Canada. But this year, I would love to go international. I would love to hit the UK. I would love to hit everywhere.
I'm with you on that. I would love to see a very united, organized campaign. We kind of tied it in with Red Shoes Rock and the Run Fast. Because I remember on that day, on September 9th, which is the International Day for FASD, people were rocking their red shoes. But that was also the week that you had your run going on. So it was really fun, you know. So I would love to see this really blow up. I think that would be really cool.
Talked about that, about possibly uniting with Red Shoes Rock. So that is, So we'll see what happens with that.
Well, that's fantastic. Okay. So earlier we were chatting about mom life. And we all have our mom life stories, and you're a mom, and you're in a season similar to my season in that you have a 13-year-old. We're not going to throw any shade on your 13-year-old, but first of all, everybody who's raising a 13-year-old should be on everybody else's prayer list. That is the truth. That is the truth, because it's a hard time in that young person's life. There's a lot going on in their brain and in their bodies that's changing, and it makes them sassy.
Oh, it does. Yes.
Talk about that. Talk about that.
Absolutely. So, and it's funny that you mentioned, so I do have a 13-year-old son. He is incredible. Both my boys are, but he is a little sassy, but not in a mean way. Like, he's sarcastic. And this week was a hard week for me. There's a lot of things going on, and he would make comments. Like, today he goes to me, we were supposed to watch Christmas Vacation together, because I promised him I would watch The Mandalorian if he watched Christmas Vacation. So he tells me today, I watched Christmas Vacation by myself, so I wouldn't have to watch it with you. I knew he was joking. I knew he watched it, but I knew, but it hurt me. And I'm like, really? And he goes, I'm sorry. I get it, but it hurts my heart. Like, but then you made a comment of our brains, which I didn't even make the connection. Sometimes sarcasm, we take a lot more to heart because we don't quite get that abstract. I think that's part of it. I think that's part of my sensitivity. I think you hit it. So
I'm glad. Well, and that's the thing. And I just wanted to highlight that for both of us, but for everybody who's listening, because learning how to use sarcasm is a bit of a rite of passage for adolescents. But we also have to, it's okay to say at home, you know what, we don't use sarcasm here because it actually hurts feelings. You know, or to learn how to use it in a way that doesn't hurt feelings, because sometimes sarcasm can be very cutting. But for people who have an FASD, when language is flipped around like it is with sarcasm, where you say one thing, but you mean another, like he said, mm-hmm. I watched it alone, so I don't have to watch it with you. It which sounds so judgy and like, I don't want to watch it with you, but he was actually playing. He was actually just trying to play. But it takes a lot of executive functioning and language interpretation to be able to do that and to do that quickly. And so that's why we always say to parents, don't use sarcasm with your kids with FASD. And sometimes you can't use some kind of humor with your kids with FASD unless you're clearly ahead of time going, okay, this is just a joke, you know, or you have to preface it sometimes because it's the language, flipping the language around and understanding the tone and the tempo and the actual words that are being used, especially if they have a double meaning. So very difficult for individuals with FASD.
Right. But then I'm like, I think every mom might take that to heart. But then he apologizes because he's a sweet kid, but I hate to be sarcastic because he is an adolescent. He has so much going. Like, he was just the lead in Beauty and the Beast and he's incredible. And he has so much in that head of his. So I try to be graceful, but sometimes I'm just like, nope, not going to happen. And he does apologize. He's such a good kid that from his father though. So no.
Well, and you know, like it's normal and it doesn't have to be acceptable. And I think that's the thing too. Like we were saying earlier, I said when my oldest, who's now 30, but when she was in junior high, like junior high is quite the setting. Like all of us parents can just, if we can put ourselves back there or if we're raising kids in that age, junior high is like eat or be eaten. Like it is a really tough time of life for all the kids in that environment. And then they're jostling and they're pushing and they're trying out the sarcasm and they're trying to figure out what their identity is and their brains are being reprogrammed and being pruned. And so it's a hard time for everybody in junior high. And I was new at this. This was my first child and she was coming and she'd have the sarcasm, have these, you know, saucy things to say. And I remember saying to her, no, not here. Leave junior high at junior high. Because like at some point, like they have to be able to handle themselves at junior high, but not at home. We've got here is safe. Here we don't talk like that.
Right. Exactly.
And I think that's okay to say. And it's also okay to say, you know what? I have feelings. Because, you know, I was that saucy kid too. And I had no clue my mom had feelings.
No, absolutely. No, they think we're robots. They really do.
They can handle whatever we're going to throw at them. And so I remember saying to my kids, whoa, 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 whoa. You are hurting my feelings right now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my kids will apologize. Well, it depends on the moment. They may not apologize on the moment. But you know what? They do come and apologize too. And I'm so glad that you're saying. Yeah. So, I mean, this is normalized parenting. How about parenting with FASD? How do you keep it all together, Rebecca? What are the helps you use too? Because none of us do this alone.
No. So my husband of 17 years.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It's been
wonderful.
but he is, to coin the term, external brain. When I was first diagnosed, just a quick backstory, he didn't really think much of the FASD. He didn't know a lot about it. And when I was diagnosed, he's like, that doesn't change anything. So you're diagnosed. But as I think, I don't know if he read up on it or just heard me talking about it, he started to do his research and just from me talking, and he realized, look, there are things that she needs help with and it is because of her brain. So he does all the cooking. He does, which he did way before I was diagnosed, because that just stresses me out. He gets the kids ready in the morning, which now they get themselves, but he does so much of he's like a Mr. Mom, which is great. And then I get to be the fun, loving mom who like plays with the kids and, you know, I take them here and there, but he keeps me grounded and he makes sure the kids make sure they eat, do their homework. So he's been instrumental. So without him, I don't know how things would work. I have really good, mellow children and I think we'd be okay, but he's the glue that keeps us together. I have my moments. I'm very impulsive when it comes to like, if my kid is having a day, my youngest, he's very, I don't want to say needy, but like, he'll be like, mom, can you come here for a second? And if I just sat down, this is the mom thing though. I'm like, what? Because I don't even think in my head, I probably shouldn't talk like that, but that's the impulsivity piece of me. And I will be.
And the lack of filter and the lack of just like, give me a second. Yeah.
Oh, I've called him my 9-year-old an a-hole to his face because there's no filter.
Yeah.
So I have my moments. My kids know my story. They know my brain. We can laugh about a lot of the things that I do that are funny, but they also understand that sometimes I do falter and I do say things that I don't mean.
So my husband's really good, and my kids are really good at navigating with me about it. So
you have a warm, loving home. It's not a chaotic, violent, abusive home. So that makes the difference. And you know, all moms falter. All moms falter. All moms snap. All moms, you know, yell at their kids. They don't want to, but it can't be our norm. We can't normally always be yelling at our kids. That really damages them. But sometimes we screw up and we say things we don't mean. And then, so then our job is to go and repair it too. Like, dude, I am so sorry. I should have never said that to you. And you know, yeah.
But yeah, we're human.
We're. And we get, and moms, and being a mom is exhausting. But I love that you've got that support. You've got your husband and he kind of keeps the routines going and he keeps the meals happening. Once or twice now, you've commented that cooking stresses you out. Could you teach me about that? What is it about cooking that stresses you out?
It's so, growing up, my mom was a wonderful cook and I never took interest in learning. And I never really understood why my mom took it personally. Looking back, there are just way too many pieces that go into it. Like, there's all the things that you need to take out. There's the directions that you have to follow. There are words in the recipes that I have to look up because I don't know, like folding. I know what that is now, where you fold something into something else. And then there's all the dishes at the end and there's all the mess and there's too much chaos. And like, I don't know how long to cook something. I don't know how to make the chicken come out at the same time as the vegetables. It's very stressful.
As I can see how that would be very overwhelming.
Yeah.
There's other people who have FASD that are fantastic cooks.
I know. Yeah, so, absolutely.
You know, everybody is unique. Everybody is unique. And I love that you said FASD doesn't define me. That's one aspect of you. What's another aspect of you? What are some of your strengths, Rebecca?
I mean, I've already said this. I'm a runner. I'm not fast, but I'm a runner. I try to stay in shape. It's getting harder as I get older.
It is noted. For all of us.
Weight just doesn't come off anymore. So then there's that. I'm very friendly and I love everybody. I do. I love everybody. And I like to help in the community if I can, and not for it to get anything back, just because I like to know that I'm helping somebody.
One time you said to me that perseveration is a strength of yours and you use it at work. Talk to us about that.
So at work, I handle insurance, medical claims for car accidents. And the insurance company that I work for has a lot of fraud. So I get to investigate our insureds and I get to see, do they really live in the state they say they do? And I get to delve into their address history. I get to talk to them on the phone and I have a way of acting really stupid and getting them to tell me things that they would never tell other people. But it's not acting stupid. It's just, I act like I'm their friend and I'm like, so why'd you do this? Why isn't this listed on your policy? And they're like, oh, well, you see, blah, blah, blah. So yes. And I perseverate though, because I will hone in on all of the insured's issues in order to find out if there's fraud or not.
You just dig in and you don't let go until you get the answers. Yep. So you get all the puzzle pieces in place.
Yep.
Fabulous strength. This fall, I read your book, Tenacity.
Thank you.
I loved the book. You talk about how perseveration worked for and against you in that quest. So talk a little bit about your book, Tenacity.
So Tenacity, I wrote after I found, so I was adopted at birth. And after I had my second son, I started seriously searching for my birth family. And I found them. And I'm not going to give too much of the book away, but I found them and I found a lot more than I thought I would. That's how I found out I had FASD. I do perseverate, and finding my birth family, I perseverated on finding them. And I would spend hours at night searching with the what I had and what I knew. I lost time with my husband because of it. I lost time with my kids because I had so much tunnel vision on finding out who my birth mother was. And so it can hinder you, but I didn't see it as hindering because I had tunnel vision. My husband and I struggled, like, because I didn't spend time with him because I wanted to find out. And I kept saying, you don't get it. You don't understand, which is true. But I also took a lot of time away. So perseveration can be okay, but it can also hinder relationships. So you got to find a balance. But when you're in that cycle, it's so hard. I still perseverate. I perseverated on my son's play. I was the mom or the adult that helped find all the props to use And I perseverated on that. I would spend hours trying to figure out what props to use where. That was great for the director and everyone else and the characters. But for my family, they're like, really? We have to go to shopping for 2 hours for you to find what now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's a double-edged sword, this one, right? It's a strength when you're on a mission and you can get something accomplished. Mm-hmm. But is it what needs to be accomplished and at what cost? Is there a balance? It's like a light bulb. You're on full or you're off and we need to have a dimmer switch. Can we just dim this down a bit and just find the balance here? Like if your husband could just figure that one out with you. I get very task focused. And if I'm on the task, it's hard for me to switch off the task.
Yeah.
So I can understand that too. I read the book Tenacity. It was a quick read. I read it on my way to Manitoba. And I loved the book. I loved your quest to find your birth family and the things that you discovered and found. And I'm not going to give it away either. But what was resonating with me is as I'm reading your quest to go find your birth family, I'm on my way from Alberta where I live with my family and my parents and my sister live here too. But all of my extended family live in Manitoba and I haven't seen them for 5 years. And as I was reading your book, I was on my trip because my heart was telling me, my body, my mind, my heart was telling me it's time to go see your family. I don't have an adoption story in terms of myself. And my whole body was telling me it's time to go see your people. And it was really interesting as I was reading your book, because you were on a quest to go find your people.
Yeah.
I really connected because I know in my body, I needed to go. And as I was reading in your book, your quest to find your people, to find your mother, to find, oh, do I have siblings? Who do I look like in this world? What's the story? What's my birth story all about is the quest you were on. And I really connected with it as a mom, but overlaying that, I was connecting with it as an adoptive mom and the importance of my kids finding who in the world they look like, who in the world they walk like, who in the world has their same sense of humor. And I know sometimes as an adoptive family, that can be a very threatening thing, but it can be a very healing thing as well. And maybe we can talk about that too. You did find some of your family. Talk about what that was for you.
So I did. So it's crazy. I found who my birth mother was, and I found her in classmates.com. I perseverated on many different avenues to find her. She looked just like me in high school. It's a crazy resemblance. And then I found her brother, my uncle, who knew nothing about me, but him and I got acquainted and I went to visit him. So that was cool. Him and I don't look anything alike. His daughter and I look nothing alike, but apparently we have the same walk, according to her husband, which was amazing to hear because I had never heard that before. And I know to most people, it's like, okay, that's, you know, nothing, but it was so much to me because nobody had ever told me I walked or looked like anyone. So I met them and they all live in Texas. And then there's a whole nother book in the works. I just have to, because since I found her, I realized I had a half brother, found that out. I met him at my 40th birthday. He's incredible. We have the same birth mom. We look nothing alike. He looks like, I've met him. I've discovered who my birth father is in the past year through Ancestry. I have two half brothers on that side. It's been amazing. And I met so many people. And when I found my birth family, I will tell you this, that I don't consider my adoptive family my adoptive family. I, you know, they're my family, which a lot of people, you know, would agree. But when I found them, they knew I was searching. They had a hard time with it, which I get it. There are all these unknowns out there, all these unknown people that I have found. And with my brain, which I don't think I was diagnosed at that point, but I am one of those people who will, I follow anybody. So my parents were scared that I would go to them if we didn't know my birth mother, if she was dead or alive at that point, that I would find her, go to her and just start a whole new life. And I get that. I get that feeling. I get why they felt that way. It didn't happen, but they're entitled to feel that way. And I get that. So that was hard for them.
Well, as the adoptive parent, we have our own fears.
Right.
We have our own fears. And number chief among those is that we'll lose our child who we love so desperately, that we'll lose our child. And the next fear is that our child will be so hurt mm-hmm. if they get rejected. It's so unknown. And none of us like the unknown, especially if we have a loved one who's at risk.
To those that aren't affiliated or aren't versed in adoption, they don't get it. They're like, okay, so you walk like somebody. I walk like my father too. Like, yeah, but nobody's ever told me that.
I just told Grandma Shauna this the last time they were over. I'm like, the girls walk just like you. And she goes, oh, the duck walk? I'm like, yeah, the duck walk. But, you know, and then that prompted Grandma and Grandpa to pull out their phones and start flipping through pictures that they had of extended family. And my kids were fascinated to see this, you know, Grandpa's sister and Grandpa's parents. He pulled out a picture of his parents. And this is the blessing. If it can work, and I respect it can't always work, but if it can work, what an enriching blessing it is for your family, for you as the parent, and for you to give that gift to your child.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And absolutely. It's complicated, right?
It is complicated. I just found my two half brothers in the past year on my dad's side, my birth dad's side. And I don't think I told my adoptive parents about it for weeks because it's still uncomfortable to me. Because I think once I found my birth mom, I still wanted to find everyone else.
Yeah.
And that was troublesome to my parents. They didn't know. They knew I was searching for my birth father, but they didn't know I would keep doing it. And I think they wanted it to stop. I think it was a lot. But, you know, I am grown. I'm 42 years old almost. And I found my half brothers and we took a photo. One guy, he's so sweet, but they're in their 60s. Just so we can get photos because we forgot to take photos when I met him. I'm looking at the photos and everyone's commenting, you guys really look alike. And I'm like, I didn't see it until I saw the photos. And yes, we do. It's amazing to me. And he's so sweet and he's a recovering alcoholic.
Yeah, there's family stories that we hear. And sometimes there's family traumas that we hear, you know, and we don't, as adoptive parents, maybe we don't want our kids to know all that stuff. Yeah. And maybe it's not for them to know when they're children, but once our children are adults, I don't know, we have to respect what our kids need and want too, I guess. You know, your parents love you, adore you. They don't want to lose you. And so maybe it's a feeling of, am I not enough?
Yep. Yeah. And that's, you know what, if they feel that way, which I think that's a little bit of it, I'm blessed that they feel that way because they love me so much. And that just shows how much they love me. And they had a loss before they had me and they didn't want to lose another daughter. And they lost me in high school. My senior year, I went with a guy twice my age, a teacher, and they lost me. I was not their daughter at that time. Like I was their daughter, but I wasn't the daughter they knew. I was a totally different person.
Your focus shifted.
Oh God. Yeah. But they loved me so much. And they let me do what I had to do. And they would ask questions but I didn't want to hurt them. And they do, they ask questions about like my cousin Linda and my dad met her and it started with a handshake. And when he left my house 2 days later, they hugged. And that meant so much to me and to her. Cause she was my birth mother's niece. Everyone's grown so much in this and there was a lot of pain. There was a lot of pain from what I found out, fear for my parents thought I might run off because I loved everybody. And I'm way too trusting, but we've all grown so much and it's a beautiful story. Beautiful.
I love what you said though. We all grew a lot and that's been my experience. We've all grown a lot pain and it's complicated. Like this is not a fairy tale. There is pain with this and things take time as well. I think I'll share this too. My twins, one of them more than the other really pushed that she wanted to know her birth mom. And I have to admit, I wasn't ready. I think she was 12 or 13 and I wasn't ready at that point yet. Because I was fearful that I'd lose my daughters, you know, that they might go, well, I don't have to listen to your rules anymore. I'm going to go over there. You know, whether that's realistic or not, it probably is realistic. I don't know, but maybe it isn't, but that was my fear. And so I let it just stay on a slow simmer for a while. I didn't say, no, we won't. I'm like, well, let me think about that. And let me talk to Grandma Shauna about that. Grandma Shauna is the birth mother's mother. So let me talk to Grandma Shauna about that. And so I tried to slow it down while I also honored my daughter's need. And with working together with Grandma Shauna, and first of all, is everybody ready? Shauna, are you ready? Because this brings up trauma for her too. Is the birth mother ready? Is she in the space to be able to meet the kids that it won't trip her out, that she won't feel threatened by me? Shauna, is it safe and healthy for you? Robbie, is it safe and healthy for you? Is it safe and healthy for the twins or for the kids? Mm. Are we ready? And from our first conversation, it took us more than a year till we determined, okay, we're ready. Everybody is in the place now where we're ready. And then Shauna and I developed a plan of, it ended up being amazing. It was safe. It was healing. It was beautiful. And we were there for a few hours and I thought, okay, that's probably enough. And then we left. And then we did it again this year. I thought maybe every year, but COVID. So we did it again this spring.
I love it. But that must have been good for you too, because you're their family. You're their safe spot. You're their mom. And they met her, but they're like, yeah, that's great. But you're the one that has a history. You're the one that's their safety. You're the mama bear.
It did not disrupt a thing. We did the planning ahead of time and we did the talking ahead of time to them with them too. Like, this is what the schedule will be like. How about we bring a snack? I brought them in on it. My girls like to, especially one likes to plan a picnic. So how about we plan? Let's bring watermelon. You know, we all love watermelon. So except for grandpa, he doesn't, everybody else does. So we always, whenever he's around, we have a great big watermelon to tease him because we all love it. And he doesn't. So we just brought a watermelon and so it was easy and some crackers. So it was just easy. And like everybody bonds over food.
Yes. And
amazing. Yeah, it was really amazing. Beautiful and easy and lovely. And I'm blessed that it is, but it didn't happen by accident. There was a lot of work.
I didn't have any of that. I was so impulsive that as soon as I found my mother's brother, I think it was in a month, I had plane tickets to go see him. And I ended up staying with him, lied to my husband about it because he wanted me in a hotel because you don't know, this guy could be batshit crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that was the impulsivity piece. I didn't plan anything. And thank God it worked out okay. Thank God.
Thank God they're okay.
Thank God we were okay and sane and funny. But
you never know. Or they could, because it could have been violent. There could have been all sorts of things happen. I
was trying to be my external brain, but at the time I was not diagnosed and I was so angry. And I was like, I do what I want. And I did. And I just, it worked out good. But yeah. Yep.
What led you to being diagnosed? How did you come to that diagnosis?
So my mom and dad get pamphlets in the mail from the agency I was adopted from. They get like, I don't know, one a year or something. And they got one that's talked about fetal alcohol spectrum disorders. And my mom was reading it. And a month before she got that, her and I had a blowout. Like, I was down visiting and it was about my birth family and how I totally encased in them and don't care about her family. Big blowout. So then she gets this letter that says, talks about impulsivity and aggression and math issues. And she calls me. She's like, I think we know your birth mother drank, right? I think you have FASD or FASD. So then I was like, okay, well, I want to get diagnosed because if I do, that'll answer so many questions about my whole entire life. In New York State, there's only one diagnostic center that I didn't know about at the time. It's in Rochester. They diagnose children and adults, but not as many adults as children. So I went to a pediatric geneticist in Albany, New York, where I live. And I was the first adult that she ever diagnosed. Wow. I had no other option, but I gave her my history. I sent her photos. She took me on. She was ecstatic, the doctor, and she diagnosed me.
Wow. How did that change life for you?
It made me, and my mom came with me, which is incredible. It made me so aware of, it answered so many questions of the past, like struggles my mom and I had. We were close, but she loved to shop. I couldn't do it. And now the FASD diagnosis, I realized it's the lights. It was the lights in the stores bothered me. It was all the clothes. It was all the options. I couldn't shop with her for hours because my brain couldn't handle it. So everything made sense and we got closer over it, which was amazing. Like I think you got closer over it
because now you had an understanding.
Yes. And she actually helps me when I go to visit them in South Carolina. She will send me a list of things to pack for the kids because I get very overwhelmed and I will forget things. Mm-hmm. She now is an advocate. I mean, she is in my corner every step of the way. She came to a FASD conference. It's been life-changing. Dad is in my corner also. He's just a quiet type. So he's in my corner also, but my mom is the one that's active and my dad's active in his own way. Yeah. It changed us. It made us closer. It made my family closer. It made my husband understand me more. It answered a lot of questions about our marriage way back. We had some big issues, impulsivity. It answered some questions.
So, amazing. So, you know, to think about that, think about some of those challenges you've faced and that your disability has, you know, contributed or been some really destructive behavior that we know is due to the brain injury. It's not a character flaw. It's due to the brain injury, but now it answers some things for you and it allows your family the opportunity to learn and grow and to be understanding. And maybe now they do some preventative things like your mom, she sends you a list to prevent some disappointment or some frustration. And your husband does some preventative things by doing the cooking and getting the boys ready for school. And
we do Christmas shopping together, because when I used to go by myself, I would come home with $200 worth of crap that we don't need.
Yeah. Well, that's impulsivity. Yeah. And it's interesting, you said you don't like to shop. My girls don't like to shop either, unless it's their idea. They have a certain amount of money that they want to spend and they go in and they go out. We don't like, it's not browsing for the entertainment of shopping.
I can't do it. Nope. But yeah, it's been an eye opener. And I used to go out. My husband used to work at bars way back when we first got married and before. And I used to go out partying. He would be at a bar. I would go out partying. I made some not so good choices. Now it's years ago. But now, you know, I know I'm older, but I also know my boundaries. And now, you know, if I go out, I don't drink as much as I used to, but I'm a lot older now. And I go out with my husband instead of friends from work that are guys. Like, I don't do that anymore.
You've learned how to do things safely and how to socialize in a way that respects your life and your marriage and respects your husband. Yeah.
Right.
Wonderful. Yeah. We all learn and grow. And I'm so grateful for you, Rebecca, that you are willing to share your story. There's always power in sharing your story because you never know who's listening. I know that I have individuals who have FASD that listen to FASD Family Life. I have friends who have FASD. I count you as one of my friends, and I have other friends who have FASD and I respect them. And you also give insights so parents can understand and learn and grow. So as they're seeing some really troublesome things in their family and their kids, they're like, okay, that might be due to the brain injury. And also there's hope. There's hope. We will get past these adolescent years. We will get past the 20s. Like, hold on to your socks for the 20s, right? Yeah, because the 20s are the teenage years. So just hang on to that. When our kids are like in their 30s, things start to slow down and stabilize.
Yep. I am about 10 years behind emotionally. So I'm 40. Yeah, emotionally, I'm about 30.
But that makes things bumpy unless we know that, you know, but there's hope. There are rough times. There are rough seasons. There's very challenging seasons. But if you know that your child has been prenatally exposed to alcohol, diagnosed or not, I don't care if they're diagnosed, but if they've been prenatally exposed to alcohol, to drugs, and there's trauma and there's all this stuff going on, we know that they're going to be developmentally delayed. There's going to be brain functions that are more challenging, particularly reasoning, making good choices. So if we know that, let's increase our supervision. Let's increase our structure in our routines. And let's parent from a place of, let's build on that attachment and that relationship first so that our kids will allow us to be along there guiding them. Because if that relationship fractures, then our kid has nobody to guide them. Thank you for being on FASD Family Life, Rebecca. Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Rebecca. She is an absolute delight, and I'm thrilled to count her as a friend of mine. Be watching out for the Run Fast second annual race that will be happening again as we celebrate International Recognition of Fetal Alcohol Spectrum Disorder. And that's on September 9th. September 9th to recognize the 9 months of pregnancy, the 9 months that we need to abstain from alcohol to have a healthy pregnancy unaffected by prenatal alcohol exposure. So watch for that and sign up for that race. Run Fast, coming to you September 9th, 2022. Now, I have a new initiative that I want to start with you. This is brand new, so we'll see how it goes. But I would love to have a hangout with you. After you've listened to this podcast, I think it'd be fun if we had a meetup. We'll talk about the episode. We could ask questions and we'll just talk about mom life and we'll talk about living with fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. And I'll do my best to answer questions, but perhaps others from the group can answer questions as well. So when you go over to Buy Me a Coffee, I'll put the link in the show notes. There you will find the time and the login for the meeting. And I look forward to seeing you there on Sunday afternoon. Again, if you like the podcast, please do rate and review the episode. You can go and rate it in the show notes and rate it as a 5-star and pop in a review, because that really helps the algorithms signal that this is an important podcast and helps other people find the podcast when they're searching. Thank you for spending this time with me. I know your time is precious. I look forward to hanging out with you on Sunday afternoon. Until next time, remember, the struggle is real, and so is success. Bye for now.